Can you guys hear the bird life over my balcony? Consciousness and all must go together. And so today, that's going to be our focus of our call. And so listen, hey Thomas, now you're officially welcome to the call. And just before you get started, let me just say that when I send all this out, and I've started to do lately, I have people take about half a teaspoon before and after bed. When the stomach acids are low, and the receptivity to the subtle energies is the highest. And what I've found is that, you know, around about 35 years ago, I was taught to meditate, and I was taught to see the divine light in my third eye as one of the techniques, and I was taught to listen to what we call the WHO sound in my inner ears. Well, you know how we've had a lot of posts about the WHO sound, but we've had not so many posts on the Ormus Forum about the photons that occur when you close your eyes. And a lot of people are reporting that now, that they get photons when they close their eyes, just a little light show. And for me, these are manifestations of the soul, of consciousness itself, of the life force that's manifesting in our experience. And it seems to be accelerated with Ormus. So with that little rave, I hand you to Thomas, the man of the moment, our guest. G'day, buddy.
Good day. Well, I think you're exactly right. Barry calls it the link between spirit and matter, and I think that's a great description of it, because it certainly is difficult to define, and I think that's part of the frustration of it, as well as the fascination, the constant, not bickering, but discussion over the lack of objective findings, of objective left-brain sort of scientific studies that we can point to and say, well, this is what's really in it. Because in part it defies description and defies definition and defies identification, to have it analyzed and then be told, well, this is really nothing. It's not only frustrating, but it's exciting as well. And I think that it's in part so difficult to describe because it's so different in everyone. And it seems to affect everyone differently because we're so different to start with. But it certainly brings, David Hudson, in fact, I posted just lately about this, but my real rave, I guess, about how David Hudson said that this stuff builds your light body. And he did, and that was a throwaway kind of in his lectures, but that's really the kind of stuff that really attracted me to it. Simply because I came to this through not through a scientific path and not through an intellectual path or a metallurgical path like many other people did, but rather simply through the metaphysical aspect of it. And I heard Barry talk at the WESOC Festival at Mount Shasta in, I think it was 2004, and knew instantly what was in my water, because I had been drinking my water at that point for 4 or 5 years, I guess, since I'd lived here. And I knew that there was something unusual about it, not only because of the local legend, but I knew that it had an effect on me. If I drank too much of it before bed, I would have very lucid dreams, for example. And I was bathing in it and drinking it and cooking with it and doing my laundry in it. And even though I wasn't concentrating it, in those days with any sort of tramping, it still was some pretty potent water. And in fact, this week, earlier in the week, the water gave out and I had to go down and open up the spring box. And in doing that, was able to collect a fair amount of what looked like kind of oily film on top of the water, and I'm in the process of purifying that. Let's see what that is. I sure
hope. Just before you go on, didn't you at some point you get your water assayed?
Well, in fact, I have had it assayed, the actual the water as it comes out of the tap, and also the water after it goes through a magnetic trap. This is a spring water source, and so there are no chemicals added to it. And I was concerned simply because the folks up the hill who have a spring had a spring that was contaminated with bacteria. And so I wanted to have it analyzed both from a atomic standpoint, you know, what was in it in terms of elemental components, but also in terms of any kind of chemicals or insecticides or bacteria or sediments or dissolved solids or fulvic acids or humic acids and all that sort of stuff, which is the drinking water testing on it, and had it drinking water tested as well as atomic tested with ACME analytical labs. And it's interesting to see the breakdown of it. It's relatively high in silicone and magnesium and potassium and sodium. There's a fair amount of dissolved metals in it as well, but nothing out of the ordinary apart from just plain old spring water, which has traces of this and traces of that. But the major components, the substantial components that are there in excess of everything else, is the magnesium and the silicone and potassium and sodium, which is unusual because the sodium it makes it very, very soft. Plus soft water as well. And it's an artesian spring in that it springs forth from the ground without being pumped out. And I collect it by gravity into a spring box and then pump it up the hill from the spring box. But like I said, this week, usually the spring box is covered up and obscured with leaves and covered over. But because we've had to dig it up and uncover it and fix the pump in it, I've had a chance to actually, you know, clean up the spring box and harvest some of the watercress around the outlets and all that sort of stuff. So I've had a whole handful of the watercress, which, incidentally, if you ever find a natural water source, a watercress which grows naturally around it is a natural concentrator of these substances. These substances, I think that Egyptians really had the hook when they called it "What is it?" because it really, they do defy any kind of accurate description. I don't know what they are. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's a chemical or whether it's a quantum substance or whatever. It certainly is not doesn't act Newtonian in predictable sort of ways. And all our, you know, all the frustration, all the discussion about analysis and annealing and purifying and all that, so it sort of reflects that. Is that it seems to defy description. But I'm one of those people that believes that it wants to come out and play as well. So I sort of invite it out to play as I collect the water, and I find that it sort of responds to that consciousness. So there's something beyond the actual physical substance. Rather, like there is in us, there's something beyond our physical substance that exists, that we exist exclusive of, separate from, in our physical bodies. If we look at every cell under the microscope, you know, there's no cell under there that is Thomas. That I am in there, but I am not of there. It's in fact, I posted about that. That's like thinking Beethoven is inside a radio because it's playing Beethoven. This radio that you're listening to, that I'm speaking through right now, is playing Thomas right now. But I'm not in here. I'm broadcasting from someplace else, and this body is localizing it. It's collapsing the quantum wave, if you will, and localizing it. And I seem to be in my body, but the truth is, I'm really not. Any more than, you know, anybody else is in their body. And that's what began to happen for me simultaneously with my discovery of these substances, is that I ended up at the same time, at the very same festival, hearing a speaker talk about the Monroe Institute. And Robert Monroe, 70s, began to have spontaneous out-of-body experiences. And he began to talk about them, and the psychiatrists were going to give him electroshock and put him on drugs and suppress all this stuff because they told him he was crazy. And fortunately, he continued to investigate it independently and ended up, he actually was the producer of the radio show The Shadow and a number of other radio shows as well, and earned a fair amount of money doing that, and then took that money and set up a research institute in Faber, Virginia, called the Monroe Institute, that has since that time done a fair amount of research about brain waves and expanded states of consciousness. And it was largely because he started having these experiences, and they started recording his brain waves, his EEGs and his blood pressure and his skin resistance and such like that, while he was having these experiences, that they began to think, you know, these are the brain waves associated with these kind of out-of-body experiences. The interesting thing is that Ormus, this experiment that I have just recently done, I took 12 people who were participants or attendees at a metaphysical bookstore, a two-day fair at a metaphysical bookstore, and got them to agree to come back the next day. And one day they had 8 ounces of trap water, and one day they had eight ounces of tap water. And I also kind of experimented with my Monroe Institute, what they call hemisync, which is hemispheric synchronization, the recordings that they release, and to demonstrate, you know, whether or not I could induce brainwave changes in people that the computer would identify as coherence. And this is not only, you know, an EEG, but also measuring galvanic skin response, skin temperature, skin resistance, and heart rate variability, all of which are considered to be parameters associated with our involuntary nervous systems, the parasympathetic system, and the variability aspects of it usually reflect the balance between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic systems. The sympathetic system actually being our stimulant, the fight and flight sort of a reaction, and the parasympathetic system, the one calming us down after one of those kind of incidents. And what our natural state is the balance between the two. And what we found was that after a glass of trap water, 11 out of 12 participants demonstrated what the computer would call coherence of the brain, that is, a temporal lobe synchronization from side to side, decreased galvanic skin response, increased skin temperature, decreased skin resistance, and increased heart rate variability, manifested in a coherent pattern of heart rate variability. Interestingly, on tap water, only 2 of the 12 demonstrated those changes. With binaural beats, the actual hemispheric synchronization CDs that are manufactured by Monroe Institute, 12 of 12 had demonstrable changes that the computer would identify as coherence, and coherence in their heart rate variability as well. So we had 100% with the binaural beats, 11 of 12 with trap water, and only 2 of 12 on tap water. And placebo effect is 50%. So you would expect of those 12 participants that 6 of them, if it was purely placebo, that 6 of them would have coherent brain patterns just because of the placebo effect. And in fact, it was only 2. So we can demonstrate that something happens with these substances. Now, I can only vouch for trap water because that's all I had. Initially, when we initially devised this experiment, I did so with John Hudson, and he was going to participate in terms of supplying powder, his white powder, to see if we could demonstrate these kind of changes as well. But, you know, John has passed over, and he's helping from the other side, I think. But but we were unable to test his white powder.
Quick question for you, Thomas. How long after taking the trap water were you able to ascertain whether the synchronization continued for any certain length of time? Okay,
no.
This is Michelle Thomas from Western Pennsylvania.
Michelle, and I think there's some water coming to you if I recollect correctly.
Yes, there correctly. Is.
Yeah, and in fact, yeah. And there is to you in Michigan as well, in Troy there. So I think it was Matthew. At any rate, what I did was hook these people up to I have a two-channel EEG made by Biomaster, and it also has channels on to monitor galvanic skin response, skin temperature, resistance, and heart rate variability as part of a protocol about meditation and watching these changes. I can print out screen images. I don't have an actual because these aren't really official scientific.
You don't have
instruments.
An actual what?
I don't have an actual printout, but I have screen images of these coherent patterns because I don't have a printout device as part of this Biomaster two-channel EEG. But at any rate, I hooked folks up to it, monitored them for 30 minutes, and some people sat there. Some people sat there and chatted. Some people meditated. I did not want to do anything but sit them in a. They were in a semi-darkened room, and there was. I had a boombox there playing what I would call, you know, kind of Enya New Age music, kind of in the background, but was not prepared to actually direct their activities. And I wanted them to be able to do what it is they felt comfortable doing. If they had to use the bathroom, they could, or, you know, I had to unhook them. But I got a 30-minute recording on everyone.
Was it the same group of people?
Yes, it's the same 12 in all three groups.
Okay. Which water was given first?
Well, it was done entirely randomly. In fact, the first day, about half the people got six people got tap water and six people got trap water.
Okay.
The next day, it was reversed. They did not know. It was done as double blind as possible. The tap water was put through a Brita filter and allowed to off-gas overnight, so it tasted the same. And energetically, I couldn't, you know, I mean, it looked the same. It had the same sort of smell to it, and so on. But I don't know. I'm sure there are people who might be able to tell the difference, but I was unable to tell any difference at all.
And when was the hemisync played?
Well, the hemisync was played as part of the process. This was an all-day Saturday and part of the day on Sunday thing. And there were a number of people. This was now 36 half-hour sessions that I had to get in there. So I had these people agree. A few of them were agreed in advance to participate, and some of them were very experienced meditators. Some of them were meditation naive. And I understand it's not a very well-controlled or highly disciplined study, nor was it my intention to come out with that kind of study. That kind of study requires a larger group, would require, you know, fewer variables. But I'm a believer, and I'm not surprised that it showed a difference. I'm just I was a little surprised that it showed such a dramatic difference.
Yeah.
So we can, I mean, basically I can demonstrate, or we can demonstrate as a group, that these substances will induce brainwave changes in the brain. Some people went into a alpha rhythm. Some people had spikes of delta, or excuse me, of gamma. There was no one who would, I would say, was in a profoundly deep absorbing rhythm, but this was people who were sitting in a chair in a semi-darkened room with their eyes open, and not
with other people around, right?
This wasn't in a darkened isolation booth with black drapes and headphones on, like except for the hemisync part of it, like you do at Monroe Institute. The interesting thing is that the changes, the coherence in the brainwave changes was similar to that which is induced by hemisync.
Thomas,
and Monroe discovered...
Michelle, whenever the hemisync music is turned off, the brainwaves then return to normal. How long do you think that the tap water affects the brain?
Now, that I don't know. I think ostensibly, or at least theoretically, it could be much longer.
That's what I'm interested in.
Yeah, well, that was the height of my interest too, because it occurred to me that there are people walking around the planet who are manifesting and who are levitating and who are doing what we might call ascended master skills. For example, Sai Baba producing Verbeauty ash out of thin air. Manifesting like that and having these things documented and photographed. Now, someone sent me an email question about have I seen people levitate as a result of Ormus? And let me say no, I have not as a result of Ormus, and I have seen people levitate. The difficulty is, who knows? I think that it is theoretically possible that Ormus and these substances are opening us up to those kind of experiences, and I think that those people who have a reality that includes those kind of experiences can have them. My experience has been a little bit different. My father was a very left-brained physician, and my mother was very right-brained, and she took me to all these churches of the prophecies and to all these psychics and tarot readers and all this sort of stuff, in part because I was interested in them, in part because it sort of made it more interesting for her, or more fun for her, I guess, that somebody else in the family was interested. But so I had a very fruitful childhood that way, and my reality, day-to-day reality, included the possibility of having these experiences, what would be psi experiences. I had an imaginary playmate when I was little. It bothered my parents that it was my twin, and I used to tell them that my imaginary playmate was my exact mirror duplicate, and they were very upset, and ultimately the psychiatrist recommended things like electroshock and chemicals and that sort of stuff for me as well. And thank God my parents had the sense not to put me on those sort of things. But I think that all of this, that my experience has been in part because of my acceptance of these kind of experiences, and in part because of the Ormus, and in part because of the interest I've had in the brainwave state. You know, now your eyes won't be able to see anything that your brain can't conceive of, rather like the Indians couldn't see Columbus's ships floating on the ocean. They were out there in the bay, but they couldn't see them because their brains did not contain that bit of information, which was large ships on the ocean bringing Spanish. And so it was several days or weeks before they actually could begin to see it. So if we build these brain pathways, we'll begin to have the experiences that, that go along with them. And I think that many of these substances do exactly that. Now, building new brain pathways and brain activity and lighting up your brain in ways that typically your brain is not stimulated. Rather like the hemisync does, rather like the meditation does. The Dalai Lama sent his best meditators who had meditated for 40 years to the Monroe Institute, and they recorded their brain waves and reverse-engineered the hemisync, and they have a hemisync that has gamma spindles on it. That is brain waves in the 25 to 30 hertz range, vibrations per second range, frequency per second range. And after 40 years of meditation, these yogis could generate gamma spindles like that for 30 or 45 seconds at a time. These substances allow us to maintain those kind of accelerated and expanded brainwave states for, 45 minutes or an hour, or even perhaps even longer. And so, to get back to that question, Lord knows. I mean, I think that the potential for these substances to influence you in an awake state, literally, what Jesus said is the kingdom of heaven is spread before your eyes, but you don't see it. And what I think this does, these substances can do, is alter our brains and our literally our receptive organs in such a way and expand our senses in such a way as that we can begin to see these things that normally we don't see. The kingdom of heaven, so to speak. And I'm not a religious guy, but, Jesus didn't say, let's make a church and make everybody feel guilty. What he said was, what I am, you are. What I can do, you can do. Why are you so amazed? This and more you will do. I'm just kind of...
And much more.
And much more. And I think it's all just a way of holding it, a way of seeing it. Your brain will deliver to you what you believe is possible. And if you believe... if you believe that these substances are transforming you and you look for transformation, then I would submit that, you'd be transformed in the same sense that, like you're talking about going for walks in the bush. You don't ever see snakes because it's not your thing. If you were afraid of snakes, fear attracts things like a magnet. If you were afraid of snakes, you'd see them every place. I've lived up here... almost 10 years, I've seen one snake. But the week that I had a friend staying here watching my dogs while I was away, she saw three snakes. And she's definitely afraid of snakes. So I don't know. I'm sure the snakes are out there, but I guess I just don't see them. And The Course in Miracles talks about it. It says, if you think this is a world of judgment and condemnation and death and dying and suffering, then think again. You're creating it. So, don't create it full of fear and suspicion and snakes. Create it full of miracles and magical substances and alchemy. And guess what happens? The world becomes full of magical substances and alchemy. It's the law of attraction. And this is a very receptive group, but I'm sure everyone, including Barry himself, has read what he puts at the end of every post. Is what you think upon grows. And so, if you think these are magical substances, then guess what? They are. If you think that they will transform your life, then to a large extent they will.
Actually,
but,
for me, it's what I think upon is gross.
It's been all I could do to not post. When Aaron put on there about your pits, Barry, I was going to put on, if you think his pits are great, you ought to see his nuts. But it was all I could do not to put that on there. But I thought, nobody's going to get that. But Barry, when he travels around and gives his lecture, and in fact, I'm sure he'll bring his nuts to Australia.
It's impossible to bring them through customs.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Gosh, that's too bad, because he actually brings the giant walnuts with him, and they are pretty impressive. And it's one thing to see a picture of them. It's another thing to actually hold on to them. So, And they're huge. So at any rate, I think that a lot of it is our own way of thinking, and I think that in large part what we get with Ormus is and these substances is what is there to start with. And when I started, you know, I come from a position which is this is a magical world full of possibility and beauty and love. I haven't always come from that viewpoint, but if you decide that that's what it is, then that's what it will be for you. Because the truth is, you're making it all up. This is a dream we're having, and you're broadcasting it. And if you don't think you're broadcasting every bit of it, then you know, consider it again. It's coming from you. You're collapsing the quantum wave. Each of us is doing that, and in an individual way, that's quantum theory, and quantum theory is fascinating when it comes to this stuff, because it talks about coherence and what Einstein used to call creepy energy at a distance.
Spooky action.
That's right. Spooky energy at a distance, and all that was actually coherence, entanglement theory. Einstein called it spooky action at a distance, because it was all coexisting as potential at that point, and it was his actual. It's our actual thought about it that causes it. And there's lots happening around us. Reality is happening all around us all the time, and we don't see it.
Reminds me of the magical mystery tour is coming to take you away.
Quite literally.
Coming to take you away.
400 billion bits
of information
is being processed by your brain at every second, and you're only aware of 2,000 of it. So, you know, there's hundreds of billions of bits of information that your brain is aware of that you aren't aware of. And I think Ormus and these substances are in that realm. So that's my theory anyway.
Nice.
And that these expanded states and the phenomena that we read about being in the same room as someone and knowing what their thought is or what their emotional state is, or more specifically, what I hear more frequently is people say, I knew exactly what they thought about me. I could hear their thoughts about me is what my clients frequently will say as they begin to get sensitive about it. They'll go out in public, and it really is a little distressing, because in general, as a group, people are very depressed. They don't have much zeal for life. They don't have much passion for living. Hardly any of them are functioning at capacity, or living their passion, or radiating a whole lot of energy. It's a little distressing to be out in a group of people, simply because the energy level is so consuming. It can suck energy from you if you're not aware of it. But people just aren't radiating a whole lot of energy, and you begin to, or at least I found, is I began to get sensitive to these kind of energies. And when I would go out to the mall, for example, I'd be able to literally read people as they walked by, if I gave it any kind of energy. I have never levitated. I think it would freak me out. But I have seen people levitate as part of the Ramtha School of Enlightenment. In Yelm, Washington, Ramtha, or at least several of the instructors there, teach techniques that among other things can induce a levitation, disapparation, bilocation, and so on. And they actually have photographs of people who are in such altered states and enhanced and expanded states of consciousness that you can literally see trees and fences through them. there are those kind of experiences possible with these expanded states, and that was what literally attracted me to all of this. Was my whole effort was really along the metaphysical New Age ascension kind of lines. I originally went to a energetic healer, to a psychic healer, and ended up learning how to do that in part to clear some of the stuff that was coming up. And I think that that Ormus really helps us do that. It's like a refining, like a focus, like a refining fire, like a lens or something. I don't think it's the journey itself. I don't think it's the end in itself. But I think that it's it facilitates the process, and I think that it accelerates the process. Having said that, I think it's different in different people. Some people are more prepared for this process than others. There are people who have out-of-body experiences who swear that they're not. For example, if you, in your own mind now, call to mind holding an orange in your hand, the color of it and the way it feels and the dimple of the skin, and you can imagine stripping your thumb under the skin and peeling it and smelling the orange and seeing the oil spray out and feeling the pith stick under your nail and feel the stickiness of your fingers, and well, gosh, my mouth is watering. I'm not eating an orange, but you know what? My brain thinks I am. And so what I'm suggesting is that experience, the calling to mind an orange, or remembering the time when you were on the roller coaster, or the first time you drove, or where you were when you saw the Twin Towers come down, or whatever, is your brain doesn't know the difference between the actual experience and the memory there, and you're having an out-of-body experience with your non-physical mouth and your non-physical eyes and your non-physical hands when you eat that orange. But your physical mouth is watering. And that's what I find so curious, is the way the non-physical and the physical are so integrated.
There are a lot of exercise instructors in universities and so on that are now experimenting with imaginary exercise, imaginary running and so on, and they're finding that a lot of the parameters that change after exercise change after going through the imaginary exercise as well.
Exactly.
And in the same way.
Well, and so, you know, obviously it's not the activity that's required, but perhaps the brainwave pattern or the biochemical markers that are released after it or whatever. You know, it's like if you cut your finger, for example, and you put a Band-Aid on it, you take the Band-Aid off after a week and you've healed the cut. You don't know how you're doing it, but you're healing it. And so we're all healers. We know how we're doing that. But we don't know how we're doing that any more than we know how we are growing our hair or growing our fingernails, or renewing our skin or digesting our food. But all of that is going on. Reality is happening all around us all this time, and we just don't have the senses to see it. We define our physical world by our physical senses, and they are quite limited. And then we invent machines or instruments to extend those senses, like X-ray telescopes and infrared detectors and so on. And so we know there are things there just because, you know, even if we can't see them, we know it's still there. But there's still a lot out there that we can't measure. They're now just talking about dark matter, for example. 85% of the universe is mass, And matter is in dark matter that's out there, but you can't see it. And so, you know, it's changing everything. I think that in the same sense. I think that these substances that we're talking about, Ormus, is one of those things that maybe someday we'll understand, but right now our intellectual prowess, our intellectual models just can't explain it very well.
So that's a good moment.
What I find intriguing is that it's been around for so long.
That's a good moment to take some questions from the free room, because there's only about another 10 minutes of call for the free room, and I want to hear some questions from the free room, because you've talked a lot about stuff that's going to provoke a number of questions, Thomas.
I hope so.
Any questions from the free room about the connection between consciousness and Ormus?
Hi, this is Carolina. Well, you were mentioning it in terms of the progression of the Ormus and the more elevation of the consciousness. Did, not addressing you personally, but the gentleman that was speaking, generally when you begin taking the Ormus, is that in any relationship to the amount of Ormus you take, or is it just the consistency of taking the Ormus?
Well, it's Thomas. I think that slow and steady wins the race. I would think that ultimately it will have cumulatively a much greater effect that if you take a small amount consistently than if you take a whole bunch all at once. But now, you know, I read the reports of people who you know, for example, will drink a whole gallon of water. Or take a powder or whatever. I don't think anyone has reported an out-of-body transcendental kind of experience like the people who used to supposedly got the real thing from David Hudson and his chemist. I don't know that people have reported that kind of experience. Although, you know, I think those kind of experiences are possible to those people who are open to them and able to deal with them. Rather like out of body experience is for me. I'm very familiar with it now, and I didn't realize that's where it was taking me. But that's what happens when you energize your light body, is you begin to leave your physical body. You phase out of your physical body more into your non-physical body.
In his newsletter, David Hudson mentioned that several people who were meditators took his product and didn't notice much of anything. In other words, whatever it was doing, they were already familiar with that place, they were already there, and so they didn't notice the difference. They didn't notice the change that occurred as a result of taking the stuff.
Well, I think some of that has to do with their vibration to start with after meditation, you know, increasing their own frequency or whatever it is that we do when we do that. Me, I started this whole thing from a very depressed state. I literally went out and said, you know, God, please don't make me come back here. I am not having fun on this planet. I am not enjoying my time on this planet. And I sort of started at that point, almost suicidal.
Would you repeat
about
that?
It.
Thomas, would you repeat what you just said?
Well, what I said was that where I started was at a very low point. I was almost suicidal. And I've come back a very long way. But it's taken years and years and years of work. I remember when I was 19 years old, and it was the year of Woodstock, in fact. I went to Woodstock. But when I was 19 years old at Esalen, one of the women saying to me, oh, you're so lucky you're doing this while you're 19, because by the time you're 30, because she was 30, you know, an old woman, and she said, by the time you're 30, that you'll be through all this stuff already. And you know what's curious is, here I am. I'm 59 now, and 40 years later, and I'm still dealing with these same sort of things. I'm still dealing, you know, with the process of trying to get through the day and trying to make the day meaningful and trying to, you know, trying to live my life with some passion and commitment, because what else is there to do? I don't think we're really here to play house or pay for the, you know, the car in the garage, or I think we're here really for other reasons, although I couldn't tell you what they are. I'm pretty sure that they don't involve Disney World or life insurance or things like that. And we certainly put a lot in the way of having that good, clean fun. You know, like, gosh, I can't have fun today because, you know, because I have to work tomorrow, or tomorrow's a school day, or whatever. Curious to me that it's curious to me that we all live so far from satisfaction and so close to the line, and we accept it. And I think that in a way, for me, my Ormus experience has been learning to not accept it, to expect the best, to anticipate it showing up, and to have it show up, and then to be able to acknowledge that I played a role in that. Because I think that's part of the manifestation process, is to get that you're manifesting it.
When I was visiting you at your place, Thomas, I was drinking nothing but the trap water, and I think I noticed something, and that's about the best it ever gets for me, is I think I noticed something. I just got some of Keith Perry's water, and I took some of it, and I think I noticed something. It's... the difference between, it seems like it's the difference between being coherent, being in a state of brain coherence, which I think I'm in all the time now. I think it's like 100% of the time I'm in that brain coherence, and being just a little bit more coherent, maybe going from an alpha state to a theta state or something like that. Just a little more coherent, a little more meditative, and it's hard to tell exactly what it is, but I know that nothing after the first few months has really given me anything that's like the rush that a lot of people describe when they first start taking it. So it isn't like a way of getting high. It's more like a way of just maintaining that coherent state, that open state that sort of lets in whatever it is you wish for, or whatever you
exactly
focus on.
And a real acceptance too.
It's
interesting to hear you say that, but I feel like I'm continuously in a coherent state at this point, and I look on a different world because of it, and the difference is not the world, but the difference is me and my eyes and the way I look upon it.
And everything feels better.
And that's what I was
right,
trying to convey. I don't think Ormus is the magic. I think we are the magic that's induced by the Ormus, that we are the instrument through which that piece is played. You know, St. Francis's prayer, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Ormus is that peace, and we are the instrument through which it is played.
Are you noticing that neat things line up pretty well for you more and more?
Things aren't a struggle anymore. I am a little surprised now when I go to the Walmart and I don't find the parking space right up next to the door.
Yeah.
It just means that I haven't put any thought to it before I got there.
Uh-huh.
It happens more frequently than not. I am certain that I am bringing myself different experiences now than I used to. And the way you're saying is that it lines up differently. But I experience it more as a matter of choice, and then I'm choosing different things lately. I'm making different choices, choosing better for me. I used to not have a clue what people meant when they said, you know, you can never fall in love with anyone else until you fall in love with yourself. I thought, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I've begun to experience that. but oddly enough, not because of my transformation in my relationships with other people, but in my transformation with myself, being able to stand. And I would challenge anyone here on the call to do this. Go to the mirror and look yourself in the eye, into your deepest soul, and tell yourself that you love you. And then listen. What happened when I started doing that is I heard, liar. That's not true. You know, and for me, that's my growing edge. That's where my rubber meets the road, is self-love and self-image and getting out of bed in the morning and that sort of stuff. And that has all changed for me around my experience with Hemisync, Monroe Institute, and these expanded states of consciousness that are induced by both Ormus and by Hemisync and meditation. And I think these are all just accelerators and refiners and lenses that concentrate it. But it's not for everybody. I mean, not everybody is, you know, if I talk like this at a cocktail party, I can clear the room in 5 minutes. People don't want to tell the truth.
Right.
You know, the truth is none of us are very, very happy, you know, way, way, way down deep. We all feel unhappy and unfulfilled or like, what am I supposed to be doing, you know, and am I going to get punished for it afterwards because I didn't, and, mm-hmm. you know, all this metaphysical kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's that's all just gone away now, and it's not that there's less of it around. It's just that I find I'm less obsessed with those answers.
You mentioned that there was a problem with getting water and selling it from your water source. Is that resolved, or?
Well, yes and no. The man who owns the spring had his lawyer call me and threaten me that I shouldn't be selling his water on the internet. As a result, I'm temporarily manufacturing it up at Swamp at Enoda, out of her spring up there, simply because I don't want him to be able to criticize me. I have not as yet heard back from my lawyer, who is researching it, but he called the other day to say that there have been several lawsuits against companies that are drawing water off of or out of the aquifer and bottling the water, and the court has upheld their right to do so and has kind of dismissed the concerns of people that there won't be enough simply because, the people are saying that it's only for personal use and not for commercial use. And that's what, of course, Dustin, my neighbor, is alleging with this water, that it's only for personal use and not for commercial use, and that I shouldn't be selling it. And so until it's resolved, I haven't gone back to running my own tap to produce the water. But
so how do you compare the water, your water, to the Enoda water?
Well, I think it's pretty comparable. The water from Enoda is not quite as soft as doesn't have as much, according to the Acme analysis, doesn't have as much potassium or sodium in it, although it matches almost exactly in terms of the silicone and the magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not as soft a water. It has a little higher content of iron as well.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's harder water, it has a little different taste to it. But it still makes some great water. And until I resolve the neighbor, the reality is he has no water to his house, and so he uses my system, and he needs to put in his own system. So this has been, to make a very long story short, he's only complaining because he wants to leverage me into giving him free water, and I'm not about to do that. The only person who doesn't have enough water is him. and that's because he's not connected up either to a well or to the spring. And so I expect in time he will be, but not through my system.
Yeah.
So I've actually the tempest has sort of passed over my house. I don't see that I'm doing anything incorrectly, and I have no obligation to give him any water or to supply him with water. And I have unrestricted and unlimited access to the spring for my personal use. So I don't think there's any problem there. And so I'm not going to respond to it. I guess there's a long answer to a short question. No, they haven't completely resolved, but I don't see if there's anything he can do but moan and groan.
Hey, I figured out the winners of... You're giving away a gallon of water. Is that correct?
Well, I have two. I'll give away 2 gallons of water, and you can pick two winners or one winner. I don't care.
Okay. Well, I've actually picked two, and the two winners are Todd and Mikhail. So I will pardon.
If you will send me their emails, I will get their snail mail addresses. Or if they're on the call, please send me your snail mail address, and I will send you out your gallon of water. You've won the door prize. Yay!
Are either of you on this call?
I'm hoping that was Michael. Is that Michael?
M-I-K-A-L?
That's me. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
In Seattle.
Thanks.
That's exciting. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hooray. Well, send me your snail mail address.
Will do. Thank you.
And I'll be happy to send you out a gallon of water come Monday or Tuesday. It'll probably be Tuesday. I'm working on Monday. It depends if I get the water run. So anybody have any more questions?
Thomas, this is Michelle. How many times do you run it through your trap for your water that you produce?
I run it through just once, but I use a series of traps. I have a 4-inch trap, a 2-inch trap, and a 1.5-inch trap. And they get progressively smaller in volume. And I use a series, but the traps that I build and sell are just the 4-inch traps. Originally, I got my second stage trap from Bob Winter. And I know he is still making traps for people on a custom basis, but no longer has his website up to make regular traps. But he still does make traps for people if you contact him, and he'll custom make traps. I've seen traps that he has made that are 6 feet high and 3 feet across. He'll make you any kind of trap you propose. Down to little tiny ones as well. I don't know how I've managed to put this particular configuration together, but it works well for me, and I have some faith in it. And so, you know, and of course that's the whole point of what I'm saying is it, because I have faith in it, it works. Or maybe it's the other way around. Who knows? But I believe it works, and it seems to work very well. But now I also use a single stage trap. A gentleman up near Cleveland, in fact, Bill Rivard built me a trap out of copper, which is plated on the inside with gold, and which is made out of copper tubing. It can deal with a great deal more pressure than the PVC traps, and it makes great trap water as well. I think he made 3 traps. He sent me one, bless his heart, and I use that up at Anoda because the water pressure is so much higher up at Anoda. We've exploded traps there before and had some trouble maintaining, you know, water pressure without exploding the trap. But the copper trap can take any kind of water pressure you apply to it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
wow, it really must be some kind of a trap to be copper lined with gold.
Well, Bill said that he chemically plated it inside with gold, The big advantage is that it's copper and can stand the pressure. But
right.
my point of bringing it up is simply because it's a simple one-stage trap. There is just one magnetic trap to it, and it produces fine water. And to answer that in a word, just once, I put the water through just once. But to make the concentrate, I put it through a series of three traps, rather than just one. But a single trap seems to make fine water too. The magnetic traps that I build are not really meant for batch water. They're really meant to hook up to a pressure source. Sometimes people will get them and use them attached to springs or to gravity feed bottles or whatever, and it's possible with a large enough reservoir to use them for that. But I usually process about 20 gallons of water to produce a gallon of concentrate. So, you know, you'd have to start with a reservoir of at least 5 gallons, but probably more than that.
All right. Thank you.
And I also sometimes people ask about salt water and using salt water in these magnetic traps. Rich, I think, up there in Vancouver or in British Columbia, I think that's how you use your trap. And my memory is that it can concentrate salt water, but I don't use it for that. And then people use that concentrate to make wet precipitate out of. I don't know whether it makes a difference in terms of quantity or quality of precipitate to put salt water through a magnetic trap beforehand, but I'm certain that it doesn't deteriorate the water.
Hi, this is Kristen. Does anyone think that Ormus itself force somehow?
One of my favorite subjects. Go ahead, Thomas.
Personally thinking, I believe so. I believe it is a consciousness that responds to our consciousness. The I think it is part of the consciousness of the universe that is in seeking itself and experiencing itself. There are people who have seen little energetic sprites and light beings associated with Ormus. There are pictures, for example, of cactus being watered where you can see light literally coming off a cactus. So to answer that, I would say, certainly in my opinion, yes, I think Ormus is a living consciousness that wants to come out and play, and that it does so through our consciousness. But I don't know. It might be able to do it on its own. Who knows? I don't know. That's the thing about it. What is it? You know, like the Egyptians say, what is it? It almost acts like an entity in unto itself. So that. To answer that, I believe it is, and certainly, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Dennis, but certainly you talk about it like a living consciousness as well. I'm certain there are people on the call here who have had experiences of Ormus entity as a consciousness, like you, Dennis.
Yeah, well, for me, I first started noticing when they used to pour off the ocean water, and the precipitate would behave as if it was trying to escape, like it was trying to sneak out. And I'm going, what am I doing handling a substance that looks like it's got a mind of its own? And
well, we've seen water move across the floor towards people.
And so that first alerted me to the notion that we had a substance consciousness crossover. A mix, a substance that had preferences, a substance that had proclivities, a substance that had personality and characteristics of consciousness. I'm going, what's going on here? And after a while, I started noticing that, which is how I started this call, we get a lot more who sound and a lot more photons of light. And from my point of view, which is what I learned about 35 years ago, to meditate on these things, is perceiving the life force, perceiving the spirit, perceiving the essence of our existence, perceiving the energy of life that drives us is quite common with Ormus. In fact, I had one guy who wrote, he might have even posted on the Ormus forum, but he just said he got some of my Ormus and he just took one mouthful, I think it was a teaspoon or something, and started hearing the Who sound in his right ear immediately. What just happened? Well, what just happened from my point of view is suddenly became a whole aware of a whole new stream of consciousness, a whole new stream of experience in their body, in his body. And as a result of taking this substance, it is, from my point of view, transdimensional. Well, for me, almost as a gateway.
I think that's a great expression, gateway, for it.
And so I see all manner of magic happening. And what I've noticed is that people often ask me, you know, there's been a lot of these questions because since Barry's article and Ormus Manifestation was published in Nexus magazine, and we've got our full-page ad next to it, and people often ring me and say, well, what does Ormus do? And I say, I've got no idea what Ormus is going to do for you.
Exactly.
Because it seems to have its own agenda. It seems to have its own mind when it comes to you particularly. And it seems to start on the thing that's most important for you, which could be getting rid of some people out of your life.
It could be.
It could be moving to a new place.
It could be
handling of a physical condition.
Well, I guarantee that it won't be what you think
it's
going to be.
Start. Say again?
It won't be what you think it's going to be.
No.
It shows up where not where you least expect it, but where you most need it. And it seems to know, maybe it's at the direction of your highest self, and some people haven't a clue what that is, but I think we know what we need to heal and what we need to do at a cellular kind of level, and I think this is that kind of need, is at a cellular level, like vitamins. You know, if you don't eat enough iron, you get the craving for red meat or the craving to eat soil that has iron in it. And in that same sense, I think what we do is crave these kind of substances when it's appropriate, when it's time, when the ego permits it, when the student is ready.
Hey, Thomas,
I just had a call. I just had a call last week from a woman who I've known for a couple of years, and I would give her Ormus, and she would feel sick. She'd feel like she wanted to vomit every time I gave her Ormus.
Yeah.
And I was mystified. Why would my lovely Ormus that everyone else seems to like just make her feel sick? Well, when I ran into her at the local shopping center a couple of weeks ago, she said to me, "Do you still make and take that Ormus?" I went, "Yeah." And she said, "I'd like to try some again." I'm going, "What?" She said, "Yeah, because I've got cancer."
Oh, my.
And I'm going, after a while, I went, "Of course! Ormus was trying to eject some stuff."
Yeah.
And she didn't know she had this coming on. And it was just starting on her with the thing that she needed the most.
Exactly.
Which is to get rid of some stuff out of her body.
That's exactly right. That's what I mean. Is that it is aware of her cancer even if she is not.
Ah, my cervical cancer is abated.
That's great news.
I went, because did I mention that when I saw her at the supermarket, I just happened to have a small bottle on my person. And I said, "Here,
just have
start taking this."
Huh.
So I gave her some right there and then, And she left a message on my machine a couple of days ago saying, it's handled.
Well, my partner Janice died of lung cancer, but she died cancer-free. She had taken Don Nance's M3, which he added copper to and called it M4 for her. And Don makes it and gives it away to people who have cancer who need it, and to remove any kind of payment issues around it. And for anyone out there who has those kind of health issues, cancer in particular, I would really recommend getting in contact with Don Nance at Atlantis Alchemy. Or not Atlantis Alchemy, at oceanalchemy.com.
Yeah.
Or Joe Lello is at Atlantis Alchemy. His stuff is good, too. So.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of great products out there, and they all sort of imbue the energy of the various people who produce them. And there are some very skilled and experienced alchemists out there. I'm very flattered when people think that or say that the water, that they get a feeling of peace and love and centering from the water. I only hope that is coming from me. That certainly is what I'd want to put out, is peace and love and centering for people. But it seems to be a gentler way for people to discover these kind of truths. But you know, when you wake up, you know, when you start taking these kind of substances, and you awaken to your spiritual process, and you discover that you're not only not your body, but you're not even your mind. You're mostly spirit, and that you exist mostly in a non-physical state. And you begin to have these kind of experiences. That's what you're doing with these Ormus substances, is feeding that light body, feeding that energetic body that is you, the part of you that goes on and on. That after all, that was the point of the crucifixion, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That death does not exist. That you know, I am not my body, so you can't kill it.
Right.
The whole point was not the passion, but was the resurrection. And so the point being that we are much more than our physical bodies. And what I'm saying is that these substances feed those parts of us that are our energetic selves, our highest selves, the parts of us that they might call the soul or the immortal soul or the part of us that goes on. The part of us that's not in here, you know, that leaves at death, because you're no longer broadcasting through that radio. The difference is to begin to see that there's just one of us here. There's just one of us broadcasting. It just comes through our radios differently. There's just one of us here. There's just one of us over there. There's just one of us. And that unity, that one mind, is that perfection that you begin to see. There's something going on that unites us all, that unites it all together, that you begin to see that the 11 dimensions correspond with the so-called focus levels between 10 and 21, the out-of-body states, and that each one corresponds on a physical, a Newtonian sort of state as well, where they talk about the third dimension and the fourth dimension being time and so on, and you can relate these different focus levels, out of body, expanded consciousness levels as well. So it's part of a big plan, and it's a very complicated plan. And what has begun to happen is that I'm beginning to be able to hold larger and larger concepts like that.
Thomas, the Monroe Institute, Bob Monroe's affirmation that he uses, I find really kind of goes along with this whole theme of I am more than my physical self.
That's where he started with. The affirmation is I am more than my physical body. Because I am more than my physical body, I wish to explore expanded energetic states, and to do so with the assistance and guidance of beings that are at least as advanced or more so than myself.
Yes.
And to ask for guidance
and
assistance.
No control and to use such greater energies.
Oh, it's a great thing, and in fact, he, you know, originally I started at that same spot, which is I am not my physical, I'm more than my physical body, and now I'm at a point where I'm beginning to question if I'm even a little tiny bit my physical body. Certainly, I exist in this physical bunch of cells that I call my physical body, but, you know, it's 99.9999% space.
That's right.
It's not really here at all. Neither is the table that's in front of you or the room that you're looking at. And interestingly, that's the Course in Miracles, which says in its first lesson in the workbook, the room that I look upon is not really here. So what's happening for me is to have things like the Course in Miracles and my experience with Ormus and the unity, one mind, and my out-of-body experience, which has really been just extraordinary, all coincide to lead me to the same spot, to lead me to the to a similar goal. And what I would submit for your consideration is that these substances, like Ormus, are doing exactly that, but that, you know, it's a required course. Only the time at which we take it is up to us. At least that's what the Course in Miracles says. But that's what I'm saying, is that this is a process that is a required process. It's the way off this planet. It's the way out of here, off this merry-go-round. You know, and Jesus said, this is the way and the truth and the life. Follow me. And so that's what I'm saying, is that what we're really doing is walking the walk of the Christ. We're walking that path, and that's the way out of here. For those of you who want to stay here and do this over and over and over again, like, have at it, man. Have all the fun you want. You know, but my original premise on my journey was to go out and throw my hands up and say, listen, I just don't want to keep coming back here. This is ridiculous. I was not having very much fun at the time. But the irony is that in dealing with those topics, I've really come to appreciate some very precious things in life. Moments that I, biting into a chocolate-covered strawberry, corn on the cob, well, you know, I mean, anybody can call it the feel of sunlight on your cheek, the smell of a rose, the hum of a hummingbird, the thrill when it lands on your hand.
Yeah. But,
I mean, things that make this awful physical body worth it for the other 23 hours and 59 minutes and 59 seconds.
And it almost makes you wonder, isn't that really the reason we are to be here, to experience all those physical sensations and to appreciate them?
Exactly, precisely. And to do so, yeah, we can draw those to ourselves. We can make life all about those experiences if we decide to do that. But that's not what we've decided to do with these physical bodies. Unfortunately.
Well, so this kind of brings something up. Suppose you got funded to do anything you wanted to do, and in the realm of Ormus, and no particular limit on the funding. What would you want to do?
What I would want to do is to. It is to facilitate availability of a, well, like, for example, what John Hudson did.
Mm-hmm.
I think the experience people had with his powder, including myself, was universally positive.
Mm-hmm.
And he made it cheaply, and he made it available, and he gave it away, and he wanted people to have the process.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd want, in the best of all possible worlds, and if I was wishing, a cheap, available, and uniform and consistent source of something like John Hudson's powder or high-quality trap water. I'm lucky that way.
Mm-hmm.
And have people take it and talk about it. The odd thing about experience is that the last thing people believe is their experience.
Mm-hmm.
They're having an experience of God at every moment. They're having, but they're not allowing themselves to experience it. What they're doing is they're analyzing it, or they're thinking about it, or they're out of body about it, they're denying it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have out of body experiences all the time. You go out of body every night. You go to school. It's hard to squeeze all of your of who you truly are, your great giant energetic self, into this little physical body. And so what, in the best of all possible worlds, I'd want to do is make Ormus available for anybody, regardless of their ability to pay for it, if they wanted it. And I would want to research, if I am my soul group's best chance of getting us the hell out of here and on to something else besides this craziness we call this planet, of endless, frustrating physical lifetimes that Buddha called life is suffering. If I have my best chance to get us out of here, then I want to take advantage of all of it. And that means the check unit and the binaural beats and the Ormus and the meditation and the raw food and all of it combined.
And
it certainly makes me feel different physically and have a different physical and energetic experience on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't help but think that it's doing something for my light body as well.
Wow.
That's what I'd like to do, I guess, is a lot of research. I'd like to prove the existence of this stuff. I'd like to demonstrate the efficacy of it. I know for sure, for example, that Burroughs Wellcome, which is now Glaxo Wellcome, studied the stuff in the 1970s because I was working there at Burroughs
mm-hmm.
Wellcome in the 1970s, Research Triangle Park in North Carolina. So I know that pharmaceutical companies have already studied it, but they can't patent it. They can't trademark it. Anybody can make it out of salt water, you know, so they can't
mm-hmm.
make $1 million. They can't earn back any kind of research investment. They can't make any kind of trademark or patented medicine out of something that you can make in your own kitchen.
Right.
So it's all about money and power, unfortunately,
right,
that drives it, and their intellectual changes and consistent results of brainwave changes.
Mm-hmm.
And more than that, you know, instead of just saying, well, it causes brainwave changes, is to know that those brainwave changes are associated with energetic evolution, with what some people would call ascension. You know, because the truth is, if there's any point at all, it's to transcend this physical experience.
Mm-hmm.
And from a metaphysical standpoint, you know, Joshua David Stone wrote a whole bunch of books about ascension, which is actually how I met Barry, was through the WISAC festival that Joshua put on at Mount Shasta in California. And Joshua used to talk about the seventh initiation, the sixth initiation, where you graduate from your physical body into non-physical forms, but then would talk up to 452 steps in the whole process. And so we are six or seven steps into a process of 452 steps back to the Godhead. I'm excited to know that most of it stands in front of us, that this ain't it. That, you know, that this is down towards the small end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see what we've done with our planet and the way we think smart, we could end world hunger tomorrow. All we'd have to do is agree on it.
Yeah.
But we won't. We could end, you know, cancer. The second largest industry on this planet is cancer. And that money keeps, that's $290 billion. That keeps people sick.
It doesn't make people better.
Because that treatment, cancer
after
treatment.
Energy? After energy is...
After energy, yeah. The energy industry is the largest one on the planet. But now they control, you know, I have a hybrid vehicle. All the patents on my hybrid are owned by Texaco. You know, that. Oh, they sure are impelled to put out a 300-mile-per-gallon engine. Of course they're not, you know. There's a project run by Stephen Greer called the Orion Project. They're trying to develop zero-point energy. They had a machine that worked, that produced more energy than it consumed, that produced no pollution, and consumed no raw any kind of resources, natural resources. And all Stephen would say when he talked about it is that, quote, previously undisclosed business interests have surfaced, end quote, that prevented him from developing this machine. This machine that would have made the deserts bloom, that would desalinate water, that you could run a suitcase-size machine that you could plug your whole house into, and it would be a standalone device that pulls energy out of the matrix all around us, that doesn't pollute, that doesn't consume anything. Zero-point energy.
Well, I guess the way to do it then is to do it and keep quiet about it.
You know, those machines are known, but the energy companies control them. It's about money and power.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, that's what we've done with this planet, is we've allowed these companies to enslave us. But I don't want to get started about all that. So.
No, we're talking about all of the wonderful things that you could do.
Well, and I think that Ormus helps us think outside the box. Lets us imagine a planet where there is enough for everybody, where everybody is eating, and where the deserts are blooming because there is free energy. And I don't think it's far away. I think that's the kind of earth changes and transformation that we have in store for us as a race. The human
race. And it's coming towards us at high speed right now.
I believe so, too. And, you know, no major prophet in history has ever predicted much past the year 2000. The Mayan calendar stone, you know, we're entering the sixth day, and we're just finishing up our fifth night. Then there's the sixth night, seventh day, and then the universal day. That supposedly ends sometime between October of 2011 and December of 2012, and that we will have the universal experience. We will be of one mind. It will be as if Eve never ate that apple, in biblical terms, or that she spit it out.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there is no separateness anymore. There is no dream of separation. We will not know ourselves in our nakedness, in biblical terms. Can you imagine?
Yeah, that'd be awful. No more, no more change. Everything would always be the same.
You know. that's a kind of a paradox, but that's literally true. And the people who will be familiar with it and will be ready for that kind of consciousness will be the people who have experienced it with things like Ormus, and dare I say, things like we did back in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, yeah.
The psychedelic drug experience, the expanded consciousness experience, for better or for worse, I think it was the same sort of pathway. To know more than what you see and what you feel.
The biggest global media event on the planet happened a couple of weeks ago, where 4 billion people tuned in to the opening of the Olympics.
Wow.
And here we had a massive cooperation of humans on cultural, sporting, political, economic fronts all at the same time. Is an outlandish amount of creativity with multiple thousands of people And then there was a closing ceremony a couple of weeks later, and they just did a phenomenal job. And at the closing ceremony, they said this was the closing of the games of peace, friendship, and joy. And I decided to capture that energy right there and then. I made some warmth straight after that.
That's exactly right. It's all about intention. So I think Ormus lets us dream these dreams and articulate these visions. And the first thing that you know, it's always easier to know where you're going if you have a vision of it. If somebody's holding up a sign and saying, this is where. And what I'm submitting to all of us is that we had someone who stood up and said, this is the way. This is the truth. This is the life. Follow me. And so what I'm saying is that's what we're doing. And that's the way off this planet. That's the way, you know, unless you want to keep doing it, like have at it. But if I can get my silly ass off this planet, I'm going to do it.
Uh-huh.
And that really was, for those of you who have called and talked to me individually, I pretty much say that all the time to everybody, is that this really came out of my deep depression about how my life was and how unrewarding it was. And I've been married many, many times. I do not live in relationship now, and I'm a little frustrated about it. This is sort of what's happened as a result. This has been a solitary quest. But I don't think it's very different than the quest that any thinking person is on, about why am I here and what is the nature of reality and where are we going and where does this lead? And people, you know, people want to have this Ormus experience. And, you know, where does it lead? I think it leads to a higher consciousness. I think it leads out of our physical bodies, which is where our whole process is leading anyway. And remember, you know, again, I'm not a religious guy, but remember that's what happened after the crucifixion, is Jesus appeared in his light body, and he said, "Don't touch me because I've not fully made this transition yet." But then later on, people touched him, and it felt, you know, and that was his light body. And what I'm suggesting is that that's what we're doing in this lifetime, is that we're spiritualizing our physical bodies, we're feeding our light bodies, and in doing that, we will change everything. We will change the planet, but we'll certainly change ourselves. And, you know, none of the old kingdom pharaohs or high priests who took Ormus in Egypt, none of their bodies were ever found. You know, there's no mummies from the Middle Kingdom and the Old Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
There are only mummies from the Ptolemaic, from after Alexander the Great in 600 mm-hmm. B.C., put Ptolemy on the throne. And then we see the mummies after that. But there's no mummies much before that of the Old Kingdom, because supposedly they took Ormus and they took their bodies with them. We are the way showers. We're taking our bodies with us, kind of like Jesus. And in rethinking that, you know, now I wish I hadn't had that tattoo after all. But I think that's what we're up for. I think this is the challenge. I think that this is the path that we are walking, is literally the path of light, and dealing with with these kind of issues in our life. I don't think that any of the people on this call are neophytes. I think that all people at your cellular level, you recognize what I'm saying, like an old song that you hear on the radio, or your grandmother's perfume, or something that immediately you're taken back. But this is, you recognize it, just like we recognized it when Jesus said, this way. So I'm just saying, in my experience, it's true. This is the way, the truth, and the light. But it's not. This is not about a religious experience, but it's about ascension. It's about what's next after you graduate from this physical planet, from the mm-hmm. Earth school mm-hmm. that we are in. None of us are here auditing this planet. we all get a grade, but you know, my friends, we all get an A plus. That's the only grade there is to get. And it's we're real lucky because God is such a big target we can't miss. So with a little help from Ormus and a little intention, I think that it will be us who show the way off this planet.
So
any
last questions before we wind this thing up?
This is Alice from Central New York. Thomas, could you give us contact information? I don't have internet access at the moment. My computer's wonky. But could you give us like a website and phone number?
Well, sure. My website is CherokeeGold.net. My physical address is Box 456 in Dahlonega, Dahlonega, Georgia. 30533 is the zip. And my phone number is 706-867-8086. 867-8086, area 706.
Thank you.
It's on the website as well, as is the physical address. And that's both a blessing and a curse. I usually get a call every day or two from somebody who is just learning about Ormus, or somebody who's read the website or whatever. It's a pleasure. But I would point out to everybody, Barry has unlimited long distance, and he has his phone number posted after every post, and he is a delightful guy to talk to, and he's the one who knows all about Ormus.
Okay.
And so I would encourage you to direct Ormus questions to the Ormus expert, or who I consider my mentor when it comes to those kind of issues. Everything I know about Ormus I've learned from Barry. I am an egg. He is my teacher. So I'd refer you to subtleenergies.com as well, which is Barry's website. And of course, the Ormus list on Yahoo. There's several different ones. There's also a white gold list. And I find following that really very interesting. It seems to go through phases, and right now it's going through this growth phase, which is very intriguing. People are discussing different issues on it, and energetic issues, and this thing about Ormus being consciousness, and it reaching out for you when you're ready, when you have eyes to see it and ears to hear it. And I think that it's some of that group energy. Well, I find it very energizing. It's a wonderful group of people, and I meant what I posted the other day about my buddy Dennis. I've never met him, but I think I would trust him with my life, just simply because that's my experience. And I'm trying to believe my experience much more than my training or than my book learning. I'm trying to believe my experience and listen to my intuition because it's serving me much better. And I've met people like Barry and Dennis and Sharon and Don Nance and Arthur, and gosh, I could go on and on. But many, many, many people, some of whom are on the call here. As a result of my dabbling as a hobby with this stuff. And it's been a wonderful experience for me because it provides an opportunity for me to witness this that is sort of a religious sort of thing, but it provides a space into which I can project this energy, and that makes it more real for me. That literally makes it more real for my senses. Because, you know, my senses and mind will only manifest within my mindset. And if my mindset allows for greater concepts, then my physical senses and my mind will manifest at a greater level because of that, because my universe literally grows as a result of it. And that's what I'm
trying to do. Now we're getting down to our last couple of minutes, so last question.
I have a comment. This is Dorsey Hathaway from Vancouver, Washington. And I really appreciated Thomas' comments. And I wanted to say that early in the call, someone asked about how much ORMIS to take. And, of course, there's many forms of ORMIS. There's wet forms. There's dry forms. There's semi-solid forms when you're taking it in the form of food. And I'd like to recommend doing muscle strength testing or using dousing. Essentially, your body, truth of any matter, if you put a question to it about what is healthy. So what I've found is when I'm asking what to take of something, even a vitamin, if I put the vitamins in my hand, the number of vitamins, and I put my arm out and I push with my other arm, I can tell how many my body needs that day.
Uh-huh.
And because our bodies are our bodies are a temple. They're the temple housing our spirit for our soul's journey through this life. So it, as a temple, it cannot lie to us. Our minds can lie to our bodies all the time. You know, your mind can tell you, oh, you don't need to drink water yet. You don't need to take a break yet. You don't need to sleep yet. You can wait a while to eat or rest or whatever. But would you treat a baby that way? Of course not. And your body, if you ask it a question, if you ask, ORMIS should I take, or how much of this ORMIS should I take, how much of this food should I eat, it will tell you what to use that are right for you. And the question, as I phrase it, is, what is the correct amount of this for me at this time? And I'll say, you can even put the question in your hand and do this. I mean, you don't have to put the physical substance. You can put the question or an amount, you know, of a teaspoon or a quarter teaspoon or an eighth of a teaspoon, as I used with John Hudson's powder. And with Thomas Water, you know, I do this. With Keith Perry's substance, I do this. I've done this with Dennis ORMIS. And so that's what I'd recommend to anyone, is to try using your body as a pendulum. Answer those questions, because it will not lie to you.
Great idea.
Your mind can go around in circles all day trying to figure things out, but your body will make those answers readily available. Okay?
Nice, Dorsey. Thank you.
You're welcome.
On this note, Anna, wind this baby up and run down to the organic markets and shop before they close.
Yeah.
Because it's 10 o'clock in the morning here.
Uh-huh.
Markets are going to close soon because they open really early and they close early. And they got oil.
Well, it's 8 o'clock in the evening here on the East Coast last night for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as I've mentioned before, if you're ever concerned about what's going on in the world and you think you're in trouble on the planet and so on, and you want to know if tomorrow's even going to exist, all you got to do is call me and I'll tell you.
This is particularly if you live in the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah, go online and tell me what the Mega Million numbers are going to be next week. And then we can split the money, and I'll study ORMIS.
Yay.
Yay.
So listen, guys, I'm going to call this call a success. It's a success. And when you leave the call today, just announce yourself and say goodbye. And so we can just hear you leaving. Because we don't often have that much interaction. We certainly haven't had today. But it'd just be nice to hear your voice as you go. So thank you so much for joining our call.
I have one of your traps, by the way. This is Richard from Vancouver Island.
Yeah, I know you do.
Yeah. And I'm,
aren't you the one who put salt water through it, right?
Actually, I haven't got around to that yet. I was going to give that a try, but it was a little too complicated at the time, and I had I didn't have a mechanically driven pump or a hydraulic to hook it up to. And I found that the battery-powered or the electrical-powered one was too much electrical interference, and it kind of knocked the stuffing out of my product. But I'm hooking it up to a very old spring that for a long time has been regarded as a fountain of youth, much like yours around here. with the local natives. So I'm going to try that and see if I can make some Cherokee Gold standard water here.
Oh, I'd love to, share some.
Yeah, and I've had, I think they put a lot of fluoride in the water around here, and I haven't been able to get anything really good out of the tap. There's something in it that's just not right. So I don't drink that water anymore. But
You think they'd have good tap water out there, I guess.
Well, we used to have some of the best water in the world, and of course the people that are running the waterworks are still crowing about that one, but you can tell when you take a drink out of the tap that it's not anywhere close to that. It's dead. It's probably perfectly H2O, but it's not. There's nothing else in there except a few chemicals that are supposed to make your teeth hard or something. And fortunately, it's not like it used to be. I remember when it was good. I've been around the planet here for 61 years, and I can remember when you could turn on the tap, and boy, it quenched your thirst, and it tasted just delightful. And then they started messing with it, and it's gone now. I can remember also being at my grandparents' place, and the water there didn't come through so much plumbing. And we used to drink it right out of the spring because on a summer day, it came out about 4 or 5 degrees above freezing. And it could have been 80 degrees outside. But, boy, when you drank some of that water, all you wanted to do is drink another glass. It was absolutely fabulous. And that's the one I want to try and trap. But, I was actually going to order a gallon of your water and set it up for comparison. And I was thinking I'd like to get some raw water, too. The shipping costs are a little high, though, and I'm on a bit of a limited budget right now because I'm still financing my lab, which is slowly coming together just fine. I have some nice long burettes now with hold 500 mils of lye, and it makes everything so much quicker and easier to precipitate seawater with. And
I'm
concentrating on that.
So listen, I have to bail, guys.
Okay, thanks, Dennis.
See you later,
Richard. Thanks a lot, Dennis. You have a good evening.
Good on you, mate.
I mean day.
Yeah. See you later. Ciao.
Thank you, Thomas, for everything. And it's funny that you mentioned the 2012 right now, because I kind of think that that's where we're headed for, is bringing the spiritual to Earth. And I think all of us are kind of like back to like the scripture part where it says, you know, where many of us are, or a couple are joined together.
Mm-hmm.
With the same mindset, and I feel that that's our Ormus family, and support from each other too, and thanks, Thomas, and Barry too.
Yeah.